I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/trip for free shipping and 365-day returns.
We just don't find any black LGBT same-sex adoptees.
A mum is female and we're both female, so what makes one of us lesser than the other?
Oh my God, this picture that we've been looking at for like 2 months.
She's real.
She's actually real. Well, I think we'd read about her personality so much in like, you know, a report and the social worker said about her, we take pictures of her. So starting to actually see her in this kind of live format was like, it was almost a bit, it was really surreal.
It was very, very surreal.
Hello, lovely listener, and welcome to Some Families. We are honoured and delighted that you have joined us today for another great episode of Queer Family Realness. I am Lottie Jeffs.
And I am Stu Oakley. Some would call me the other piece of the Some Family puzzle. I don't know if that's how you would position me in this grand scale.
Puzzling.
I am a puzzle. Like one of those really tricky ones that have got far too many pieces and feels they're falling apart. And also, you feel that you've always got a couple of pieces missing as well. I think that sums me up right now. But hello, listener, and hello, Lottie. How are you doing this evening, my darling?
I'm doing okay, other than nursing a giant lump on my head because my daughter threw a shark jug. She threw the jug. She didn't throw it at me. I just happened to be in her way when she flung this really heavy plastic jug thing across the room in the bath, and it just knocked me on the side of my temple, and oh my goodness, did it hurt. And it's come up in a massive bruise. She was sweet about it, though. She was like, she realised she'd hurt me and she was apologetic. And then she insisted on putting a bandage on my arm for about half an hour afterwards, which was like very sweet, but ineffective.
Oh, bless her.
Yeah, other than that, we're doing okay. How about you, Stu?
I'm good. I've got my parents' ruin for this evening. Although I've got a special twist on parents' ruin this evening.
Oh, yeah, what have you got?
So it is my new thing. It is, and God, this makes me sound really dull and boring potentially, but it is, it's sparkling water with this new amazing crushed lime and mint cordial that I found. Mm. And so I pop it in a wine glass, I put some ice in, and I feel like I'm sipping a wonderful mojito. So
nice, it's I'm similarly
curbing that midweek, like, feel that I need something to drink, because it is... Listener, we are in troubling times, and let's just say parenting is not the easiest right now. So instead of turning to the bottle, I'm turning to the cordial.
Good for you. It would be, a slippery slope, I think, were you to drink your sorrows away at the moment.
It really would. It really would. This week, we have another problem shared that this week I'm going to throw at you, Lottie. So for those that don't know, we're basically agony aunt and uncle right now, because a problem shared is a problem halved. So I've got one for you, Lottie. This has come in from Harriet, who says, my big sister and her fiance are having a baby due in June. How lovely. The baby is a result of my sister's bun in the oven, as it were, and so we're concerned that her fiance won't quite feel as involved, especially as it gets closer to the time, including baby showers, etc. I was wondering if you had any ideas for gifts that would make her feel more involved, or things that we can do for her. I hope you understand what I mean, and if there's any chance you can help, thank you so much. Well, Lottie, I feel that you are best to answer this, being the other mother.
Isn't it interesting that when you were reading out the problem, the first thing I'm thinking is it's a man and a woman. And like, I'm presenting a podcast about queer families. And yet,
and that's the direction your brain
went. And yet my head still goes into that. And I'm thinking, wow. Like, and then at the end I was like, oh, right, it's two women. Oh, anyway. Maybe it was the fiancé.
It threw you.
Anyway, hello. Thank you for sharing it with us. I firstly want to congratulate you on being so emotionally intelligent and sensitive as to be thinking about your sister's partner's feelings in this. And I think that that is really kind and really generous of you. One of my first pieces of advice is going to be to not really treat her too differently to your sister. I think she's a mum too, so rather than think, oh, we'll give the mum one thing and then the partner something else, just give them the same kind of thing. If you're looking for a gift or if you want to give them a pampering set for after the baby is born, it shouldn't just be the mother who's carrying the baby who gets that or needs that. It might be really nice for her partner to have that as well. But then, of course, there are things that the partner of somebody who gives birth will be going through that are quite specific to that experience. So, or you could give them a book. I don't know, we had the basic, like, what to expect when expecting books. And I, as the person that wasn't carrying, was quite good at sort of reading all of the books and like retaining all the information, and that really felt like that was my way of kind of involving myself in the experience. So it could be a really nice gesture to give her the baby books, although they've probably already got it already, or just a nice children's book and say looking forward to being able to hear you read this to your son or daughter. Just it's like the language of it as well, of like not sort of stumbling over like the language, and it just being really natural and thinking that she is just as much of a mum as your sister is.
I think the fact that she's even just reached out and she's being so conscious about it, I think already just shows that she is thinking so much about her feelings. And
it's a gift in itself.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, gifts, physical gifts are good as well. But I think that's a really nice way of doing it. Isn't it interesting that heterosexual couples, the baby showers are so female centric? There's no equivalent, is there? Shouldn't baby showers be more the couple together?
Yeah.
It should be a parent shower.
Yeah, or just I think it would be quite nice for guys to get together before having a baby and sort of talk about their feelings. Or...
Did you have a baby shower?
No, if we did anything, it was the two of us together. Like, if Jenny had done arranged a baby shower for herself and not invited me, I would have been livid. Oh, you know, can I just say one more? What I think is like the best present that anyone can give anyone who's just had a baby is their time and help, and just saying like, this is a voucher for me coming over and cooking you dinner and washing up one night is like the best thing you could give someone.
But following through on it as well, 3 weeks after you've given birth, I'm going to be round and I'm going to come and do your housework for the day, or
exactly.
I'm going to come and cook you dinner.
That would be so nice. Yeah.
Oh, well, hopefully we've answered that question for you, and congratulations to your sister and her fiance, and thank you for reaching out.
Yes.
If you have a problem that you would like shared with Lottie and I and our Some Family listeners, then please drop us an email to somefamilies@storyhunter.co.uk. Let's move on to our special guest of the week. So this episode, Lottie and I get to speak to the incredible Dee Dee and Priscilla Akutu Carter. They are adoptive mums to the most precious, and I know we say this about all of our guests, but she is so adorable, little Ava or Miss A.
Dee Dee and Priscilla are really big advocates for adoption, so have a listen and we'll be back at the end.
Well, hello to Dee Dee and Priscilla. Hi, guys.
Hello.
Hi, hello.
Thank you for joining us on Some Families. Let's kick things off by you introducing yourselves and your beautiful family.
So I'm Priscilla, and I am wife to Dee Dee and mum to Ava. All three of us are
Londoners born and bred, and we now reside in Surrey.
Yeah, and I'm Dee Dee, but same as what she said.
And Dee Dee and Priscilla, tell us a little bit about your daughter, Ava, or Miss A, as you affectionately refer to her on social media.
So Ava is 7. She is a spirited child, shall we say. She's very strong opinions. But yeah, she's a very bubbly, cheerful kind of child. She's got a great sense of humour.
She's into a lot of things. So she's massively into drumming.
Yeah,
so
she's a drummer.
A little drummer, so she loves that.
Nice. Do you love that, though?
So we've got drumming pads.
Yeah.
Oh, drumming pads, nice. So she can put her earphones in.
So and you can turn the volume up and down. So they're like, you can plug them in and then they're...
The most important thing being they can be silent.
Yes. Amazing. I'm taking a note of that.
Have you seen her personality develop since you adopted her into... Do you feel like she came to you as like this fully formed person already with all these interests? Or are you now sort of seeing yourself and your nurturing in her in that respect?
Yeah, I would say so.
Yeah,
definitely. I guess when we met her, because we adopted her when she was one, and we asked a few questions in terms of the foster care, for the social worker, what kind of her interest, and they kind of said she's quite musical, she enjoys music, which she still does now, and we enjoy lots of different types of different music. We're quite eclectic in terms of taste, so she hears a lot of different types of music, that's kind of just, I guess, probably added to her personality in that way. But I think we'd seen her personality develop since she's been with us a lot more, I'd say. So it's probably more nurture. She's definitely got a balance of both of us with some of her own Ava slant on things.
I think that I find that quite interesting because I definitely see a lot of us in her.
That's so nice.
Yeah, you definitely feel that with the nurture. So I adopted 3 children, and you, at the various stages that they get to, you suddenly see, oh wow, that's me, or oh wow, that's my husband in them. And it's, yeah. And could you tell us a little bit about your decision to decide to adopt in the first place, and how you came to that decision to start your family that way?
So we considered a range of different sort of options. So we were looking at insemination, adoption. We didn't so much count as surrogacy, but we thought between the two of us, one of us could look at the potential of carrying. The more likely potential would have been Dee Dee, because it's not really my bag. We went to a show which I believe is now called Modern Family Show, but it was the Alternatives Family Show back in the day. We went and looked at a range of different options. And for us, when we looked at insemination, we just didn't feel that personal connection with the process itself. Whereas when we considered adoption, and it was something that independently, so it was a thought before, but this really made it quite real and solidified it for both of us. So we definitely both thought, actually, this feels like the way to go. And the journey was transformative, I'd probably say, from a personal perspective. In many ways, it was physically transformative because it turned us from being a couple into a family. But there was also a number of kind of things that you touch on. You might be able to resonate with this in terms of the process, that you really start to uncover how you live and how you want to live and the family you want to create. And you really get we say it all the time, I almost think every parent should have these kind of foundations, because the kind of classes that you get, the things that you learn, that when you speak to birth parents, it's such a different experience. Yeah. But I'm very grateful for the
It's even just understanding. Yeah, definitely. I think we were quite open with the process. I think we just fully understood what the process was for and why we were doing it. So, and because adoption was our... Well, that was our first choice. So I think that's probably why that may have added to why we were so... just generally just open to the process, very open-minded with it. I mean, we're quite open-minded in general, but I think that whole process of kind of like the adoption process itself before you are approved was it was cathartic and really helped me understand who I was like a bit more before I became a parent and how that may inject into you. We had to look at how we were both parented separately, also in different families, how we were both parented and how would you like to parent, what things would you bring. It gave you time to really kind of think and consider those things, which you may have not done as a birth parent, I don't think.
It sounds like a really important process to go for anyone and everyone to go through that's thinking of becoming a parent. And do you mind me asking if there were any areas that it brought up that you sort of realised you disagreed on that you hadn't realised before? Or just in the process of talking about your approach to parenting or your wants for this whole experience, that was there anything that you were like, oh, we're not aligned on that, and that feels a bit scary, and how do we get over that?
I don't think we really had that on major. I'm thinking about major things. Big decisions.
I don't think there was anything major. We probably had quite a good in-depth chat, and we like to have good in-depth chats.
We like to be thorough.
We're very thorough. So I think we probably thought about those things. Like, for example, like we were parented quite differently. I come from a Nigerian background, so they're quite hardcore in how they like to discipline and things like that. Whereas Priscilla came from, someone St. Lucian came from a
They are disciplinarians and they have the hardcore, but they do it with a smile. So perhaps it appears less intimidating. But okay. there was sort of some differences, I think.
Yeah, which we
in the parenting.
About.
But I think because I think you're quite right, that because we talked about it a lot, this wasn't just a kind of snap decision. We'd taken a few years to really consider
and get there
before starting the process. I think a lot of those discussions were had before we even embarked on the process together.
So. Yeah.
Right. Yeah. And it's so great for us to have some adoptive mums on the show, because I don't think we've had many, if any. It's always been dads.
I think you are our first female adoptive couple on the show, actually. Yeah.
It kind of brings me on to a question about whether there's a bit of a stigma attached to being adoptive mums.
Mm. Yeah, I think there's kind of two things to it. I'd probably say, because when we say that we know it was adopted or we adopted, it's almost like the question's almost like, your rooms are not working? We're like, no, they're fine, working fine. I think because, there's two things being, I think when people come to adoption, maybe more in the straight world, it's normally because it tends to be because they've been through rounds of IVF, so it tends to be on the other side of that, and they tend to be then older parents because they've had to wait longer and blah, blah, blah. We were quite young, we were told we were very young to come into adoption. So I think there's that perspective, and I guess the other one being that, I guess if normally women probably think, well, if my woman's working, I'd rather just have my own child. I think that's just a natural thought. They have that natural urge to want to do that. So I think that's probably why there's probably lower numbers in terms of LGBT adopted mothers, maybe, I think I'd probably say.
Yeah, we certainly in our experience.
We've definitely found it hard to find some.
We don't find many at all. It's really quite rare. But I think for the reasons that Dee Dee stated, that it's probably people, and also not discounting at all a woman's urge to carry, which is something I completely understand. But personally, I don't relate to that because I have the want of having a child without the want of carrying. Mm. Or about the need to carry. So it's been much easier to consider from that perspective.
I think initially, I think I was like, oh no, I'd like to have the kind of the feeling of carrying my own child and giving birth to my own child. But then when we actually went to discuss the process, I felt really disconnected from it emotionally. There was like the disconnection was there. There was no kind of space for us to kind of really be part of that process. And I think by adopting, when we went to the adoption seminar, I felt emotionally connected, I think, because we were both going to go through it at the same time. We'd both go through it. We'd both be part of the process.
And that's interesting. I've never thought about that before. There's a real equality to the experience that you don't get in any other way.
That's what led to my husband and I. Like I say, we didn't really consider surrogacy at all. But the really strong pull for us for adoption was it would be equal. We would be on an equal playing field and it would be the same. So I completely hear you on that.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Okay, I have two new obsessions that I need to share with you. Impress No Glue Press-On Manis and Impress Press-On Falsies Lashes. Trust me, these are getting ready game changers. Both require no glue, so there is no damage to your natural nails and lashes, no mess, and no annoying dry times. Just one step and you're done. Boom. Instant glam. Visit impressbeauty.com/presson and use code PRESSON25 at checkout for 25% off Impress manicure and Press-On falsies.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Let's talk about when you first met her. What was that like when you'd gone through that whole process that's a long-ish process, quite in-depth, but then you finally get to that point where you see her little face?
I think it's after we just had the matching panel. We just finished the matching panel. I think we went over that afternoon to go and see her. You know, I think our social worker printed like A4 sized pictures of our faces, which, you know, she was had them on the floor, they were on the wall, stuck on the wall.
How old was she then?
She was one.
Yeah, that's a really surreal moment, isn't it? I remember that, walking into the foster carer's house and literally my husband and I's pictures were plucked. It was like they were fans of ours or something. It was like these big posters of us everywhere going,
Exactly. You're like, oh, there's my face on the floor. And I think they'd laminated some so she could like walk around with them and stuff. But yeah, it was very unusual.
It's so funny. I think we also had it. That was an interesting experience because she had just woken up for a nap and the foster carer kind of picked her up out of the cot and we were sort of standing in the corner of the room. And she was a thumb sucker. She still is sneakily sometimes, but she was sort of definitely, she had her thumb in her mouth and she was like looking, literally bouncing her eye from one person to the next person to the next person. And our foster carer said, she knows your faces and she knows your voices. We'd recorded a video clip for her as well, walking around the house and all of this kind of stuff.
Did a Build-A-Bear.
We did a Build-A-Bear toy.
Yeah, so you can record your voice and put it in the palm so she presses it and she'd hear your voice. So they, I think you were like saying hello and things. So.
Which was nice. She still got it. She still plays it today.
Yeah,
really
she still got it, yeah.
And, and there was a little book which was you kind of press, and it's, again, your voice. So she said she knows your voice, she's heard your voice, and she was kind of holding on to the foster carer, but had her eyes clamped.
She's literally staring at both of us, like one to the other. And we were just looking at her thinking, oh my God, this picture that we've been looking at for like 2 months.
She's real.
She's actually real. So yeah, I think we'd read about her personality so much in like, you know, her report, and the social worker said about her, we'd seen pictures of her. So starting to actually see her in this kind of live format was like, it was almost a bit, it was really surreal, actually. It was very, very surreal.
And is there a lot of pressure in that moment for everything to be perfect? Like, you know, if she started crying or had a tantrum or something, like you can't control that moment.
I don't think we were very expectant in that moment.
No.
We were just like, we go and we see.
And we see, yeah.
And if she doesn't even, she might not even come to us in the first instance. So I think the first thing that was quite reassuring was the fact that she was just staring. And she actually did come to us, and she was quite kind of, when we started talking, she really wanted to play instantly. So we were like, okay, let's play. I do remember thinking, God, the pictures don't do her justice. Yeah, she's so cute.
So sweet. And so you eventually took her home and you settled her into her new life with you. And in the meantime, presumably the two of you were also getting used to this new way of life. And we hear a lot about postnatal depression and mothers. Stu and I were just talking earlier about how you never really hear about fathers, which is a shame. Suffering from the sort of catharsis of having done this big thing or just readjusting to a different kind of lifestyle or just the hormones and everything. Do you think that a similar thing exists for adoptive parents?
Yeah, definitely.
Without a doubt.
Without a doubt.
Post-adoption depression is real as postnatal depression.
Yeah.
Certainly, biochemically, the same things are happening in your brain.
Right.
The same
it's
emotions.
Delayed, though, as well, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. And it's very, we experienced it.
We both did at the same time, unfortunately.
First 6 months, definitely. It's a huge, it's almost adjusting to the shift in your life. We were together for 9 years and we travelled a lot, we went out a lot, we were very social. We're still very social.
We had a great probably 3 weeks.
Yeah, where it was,
this is nice, this is different, but it's nice and that kind of thing. And then it just kind of, I don't know, it just came out of nowhere, to be honest.
Yeah. Were you acknowledging it at the time, or is it only in retrospect that you're now like, oh, okay, that's what was going on?
Well, no. We were still seeing our social work at the time. So when we were kind of talking, I don't think we both recognised when it happened. We just realised that we'd kind of like taken a slump, but didn't quite understand what it was at the time.
That's true.
And we had done a bit about it, about post-adoption depression during our process. But I think because we were just thinking, oh, this is a new child in the house, and we're still kind of getting used to her routine and everything. When it kind of came, we didn't really recognise it. So I think we were still seeing our social worker at the time. Mm. So she then kind of said to us, I think you're experiencing this. And then we remembered what it was and had to do some reading on it and things. But yeah, we didn't recognise it straight away. But it hung around to around... It
wasn't quite 6 months, it was about four and a half months.
Four and a half months.
Yeah.
It's real. It's very real. And the thing is as well, I think the week... When you're going... I think for some women, when you're going through pregnancy, you get the hormones, you understand that your body's changing and... There's a baby coming and there's something happening with the hormone levels as well. Whereas the week before we saw Ava, we were at a spa. And then the next week we were parents. So they kind of like, it was just like, just couple to family was a matter of like a week.
There is that. Even a week, I don't think. Is that transit, much less. Yeah, I think it was a matter of days.
3 days.
That transformation is instantaneous, which it is for all parents. But you have this fully formed child that has their characteristics and a routine. And all of those other things. So the difference is, it's not newness altogether. Your child already comes with a routine and comes with a schedule and comes with likes and dislikes. You just don't know it yet.
Yeah. Is that resonating for you, Stu?
Yeah, I find this topic incredibly interesting. I feel I did have some form of post-adoption depression when we adopted our third child. It's not something I've ever actually really talked about before, and I suppose it's just having this kind of conversation today that's kind of brought it to the front. So we adopted our first two children, and then he was a kind of surprise sibling that came along very quickly, very unexpectedly, and then came into our house very quickly. I just didn't feel like me, and I started to feel, yeah, very depressed. And why I also find it really interesting and why I really appreciate you both speaking about this as well is I think that obviously when it comes to postnatal depression, there's a lot of stigma around it and people not talking about it enough. But I feel there's a whole also other layer when it comes to post-adoption depression, because I feel like so many parents maybe feel like I do. It's like you're a bit of a performing pony, I feel, when it comes to social workers. And it's almost like you're being judged and reviewed on how you're doing as a parent. You know, you're getting social worker visits once a week, then once a month post the actual placement. So it feels like if you feel like you say anything, I always felt that there was that fear that they'd be taken away, or that it's something, you know. And I know that that's not the case, and I know that that's, you know, it's drummed into you when you do your training that they're there to help you, they're there to help support you. But when you're in it, it's really hard, and I feel it's really hard for adopters sometimes to be 100% honest.
I definitely agree with that. I think, luckily we'd built up quite a good relationship with our social workers, which that helped just being honest, I think, really, because we were struggling. I mean, Ava was, we were still following her routine and everything, but we tried to keep our depression as much away from her as possible. So she was getting everything she needed, but we definitely felt we were able to be honest with our social worker, which then meant that we received a therapeutic social worker on top of our normal social worker who'd come along and kind of like work with us to kind of work through it, which really helped actually.
What would your advice be then to anybody that's listening to this who has maybe recently adopted and is feeling that first prickles of depression or anxiety or just feeling not themselves, like Stu described it? What would you say to them?
That your feelings are more common than you would believe.
Yeah.
We have spoken to so many adopters who can really understand the impact and the kind of emotional overwhelm that comes with post-adoption depression. So it is extremely common. And I think the most important thing and the thing that worked for us was accessing help wherever you can. So Didi mentioned our social worker. We had a great support network of people that we could just go, you know, we had one particular friend who every week. We met up every weekend just to how are you doing and would focus on us. And she had children. And so the children were able to play together. You know, it was just, it was a godsend, an absolute godsend. So I'd say with those lifelines, with the addition of a therapeutic social worker who was excellent, our local authority were brilliant, and our own support network, just by opening your mouth and asking, before you knew it, in fact before we even realized, just one day you just felt yourself again.
Do you have many other adoptive parents within your support network?
We do now. I don't think at the time we didn't, but we do now. We have quite mixed in terms of support network now, so it gets a nice good variety and diversity as well.
How have you met them, found them, or is it just through the community? Because I think it is so important for people to have that community feel with other adoptive parents and to meet other adoptive families.
So we were part of New Family Social,
yeah,
whilst we were on the adoption process. I mean, we weren't always taking part in the forums, but just going on to read other people's questions that they were putting forward and people's answers. So the mixture of people who were on the process, finished the process and been placed. So it was a good mixture. So you get a good idea of what, you know, different people's experiences as well. So that was really quite helpful.
We also did things like the adoption day. So part of the local authorities themselves will partner you up with kind of support groups, etc. And that's where you can kind of, we developed a few sort of friendships that way. Quorum have done some brilliant events. Quorum have been brilliant, as well as Adoption UK. It was just a really nice way to connect, but also it's just nice to say that you know Ava has a very diverse set of friends, but also come from quite diverse families. So it's really lovely to be able to say, oh, he's got two dads, and she's got just a mum, or he's got just a dad. It's lovely to have that. I think it's just a nice example for her.
That brings me on to my next question, actually, which I was thinking that you probably got a lot of advice from other adoptive parents about how to talk to your child about their origin story and their adoption. If I was to ask Ava to tell me about her family, what do you think she'd tell me, or how would she explain it?
Depends how she's feeling that day, to be honest. I think one day we decided to ask her. I think she's maybe three.
Yeah, I think she's about 4 years old. How did you think
You came here. How did you think you got here? She goes, well, I think you. So I'm mummy, and Priscilla's mama. She goes, I think, well, I was in mummy's belly, and then after a little while, I crawled out and I crawled into mama's belly, and then I was here. And we were like,
you're like, that's exactly right. Well done.
And I was like, is it if only?
She does talk about us being an adoptive family.
Yeah,
because we've had a lot of life story, kind of contextual work we've done behind the scenes. She would probably say that, if she was to describe us, she'd probably say, Mama's a bit crazy and talks a lot, but probably like play games and stuff. Yeah, do the old game playing. What would she say about you? What do you think?
I don't know what she'd say, actually.
I think she'd say you're really funny.
She's quite proud of having two mums.
Do you think she'd say that before she said she was adopted?
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, she does. Yeah.
Absolutely. Hands down.
She likes to out us quite a bit. So.
All the time.
All the time.
Can you give us an example?
Tesco's.
In the queue.
Anywhere. Paying,
and she just says to the woman, I've got two mums. In the pharmacy.
The Amazon delivery guy. Did you know, this is my mummy, the other one inside, but she's very happy to out all the time.
That's amazing. That's brilliant.
Have you ever experienced any challenges as an LGBTQ plus family?
We haven't really.
Not to us.
Because we tend to hear people, unfortunately, have quite not very nice stories, unfortunately, as LGBT parents.
Not to our faces.
Not to our faces, should you say.
Kind of anything that's overt or would be considered to be sort of offensive. People are always really quite intrigued, I think.
It might be because the way we look, probably that's why they're most intrigued, I think, probably.
Explain that.
Because what's happened in the past sometimes is, if one of us are separate and you say, oh no, and everyone's like, oh, I've got two mums, then they automatically assume, for some reason, that the other one is probably more butch. So when people tend to see us together, they're always a bit like, they're always like, oh. So what we have had, Ava probably looks more like Priscilla than most. When they initially see her, they'll say, are you the aunt? And I'm like, oh, no, I'm her mum. And then it's like, oh. But other than that, that's quite as far as it's probably been, really, in terms of anything negative.
It genuinely has been people who've been intrigued. Genuinely been like, oh, well, that's really interesting.
Yeah.
I thought you were sisters.
That's so annoying when people think that.
I know.
Even Ava says, oh, they're not sisters. I've heard her say it once. She said, they're not sisters. And I was just like, well, even a child has to, like... put things right.
I think that's really positive. And for anybody that's listening that's worried, because I think it is a real worry for parents going into the process, that they're going to be faced with a lot of potential homophobia as an LGBTQ plus family, And yes, it does happen. But I think the more and more people we speak to and more positive experiences we hear, the better I feel we're moving as a society. And I think so that's really, really lovely to hear. And hopefully that will be very heartwarming to anybody who's at the start of the process and may have concerns.
I'll probably say in terms of going into the process is just to keep things quite open-minded. And also, if there is anything, I guess, which you may deem as being maybe negative, is to probably just pose the question back and just to clarify what they meant. Because I think that's the only way you can... It's almost like educating the person at the same time if you do come across that kind of problem.
Well, that's good advice. I've never heard that before. So if somebody said to you, like, who's the real mum? You'd say to them, let me just try and understand what you mean by that.
Yeah.
Or probably a bit more direct. Probably a bit more like, well, a mum is female and we're both female, so what makes one of us lesser than the other?
Right. That's so nice.
Yeah. Frame it in a way that's just almost the logic is then... The logic disappears from that comment.
Well, thank you to Dee Dee and Priscilla. Two more utterly amazing guests to add to our collection on Some Families. So we want to hear from you. What did you think of the episode? Do you have a problem you want to share? Is there something you want to show and tell the class? Then let us know. You can either slip into our DMs on social media. We are at Some Families Pod, or you can email us at somefamilies@storyhunter.co.uk.
Or you could go to our website, somefamiliespod.com, where you can find full transcripts and past episodes. And please, if you can just spare a second to rate us, not to sound too needy, if you could just... little click of your thumb on wherever you get your podcasts, just to show us you care. A little review, if it's kind, also wouldn't go amiss, because it all helps us get Some Families up in the podcast charts and listened to by more queer families who need us. We will be back next week with another episode.
Yes, we will. So thank you for listening. And until next week, it's goodbye from me.
Goodbye. This episode was produced and edited by Hattie Moyer.
Some Families is a Story Hunter production.
Okay, I have two new obsessions that I need to share with you. Impress No Glue Press-On Manis and Impress Press-On Falsies Lashes. Trust me, these are getting ready game changers. Both require no glue, so there is no damage to your natural nails and lashes, no mess, and no annoying dry times. Just one step and you're done. Boom. Instant glam. Visit impressbeauty.com/presson and use code PRESSON25 at checkout for 25% off Impress manicure and Press-On falsies.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.